Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today we have Kat Kavner on the show. Kat is the co-founder and CEO at Heyday Canning Company, which makes these amazing beans and soups that I am just addicted to. I was so excited to talk with her, and I was so surprised that she lives here in Fresno. So this is a fun conversation about beans, nutrition, vegetarianism, and a lot more. I know you'll love this conversation. Let's go meet Kat, and Baker will take us there.
Blessed to infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best!
Kat, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Oh my goodness. Probably my all-time favorite is the spicy shrimp burrito from Don Pepe.
There's a lot of people with the shrimp burrito, and I will admit I still have not had that. What am I missing out?
It's delicious. It's the best shrimp I've ever had, I think, in Fresno, of all places, so far from the ocean, but it's delicious. My husband...
Do they season it with something? Is there some kind of rub on it or something?
No, they're just like perfectly cooked, the most like succulent, juicy shrimp. And then they have this spicy salsa that's really good that just my mouth is watering. It pairs perfectly with the shrimp. It's a very simple burrito, which I think is why I like it, but everything is just really well done. And it's just delicious. Before we moved here, whenever I would visit my husband's family who lives here, that was like the one stop that we had to make was get the spicy shrimp burrito from Don Pepe. So that's definitely still a favorite. When we're feeling a little more fancy, Saison, absolutely delicious. We love Limelight. We love Heirloom. We're at Heirloom a lot. We're at Butterfish a lot. We're at Made like all the time. There's a lot of good food around town. There's a ton of good food around town.
I would probably have Made every day for lunch if I was allowed to. I stop myself, but if I was allowed to, I would just kind of, and then there's the kind of the other one that's emerged, the Hummus Republic just version. I think Made is a little better in my mind. I think I like the components better, but I love the concept. And it's Mediterranean food is good for you. It tastes great. Yes. And they have great options there.
I agree. And you just feel so good after eating it every single time. I wish that I just had a Made in my kitchen.
Yeah, just a bunch of deli containers full of all the ingredients.
Yes, just like perfectly prepped ingredients that I can mix and match. That's the dream one day.
Fantastic. We're going to talk about food for a while. I want to ask you first, what was food like for you in your childhood?
We definitely made family dinner a priority. And I think that's probably where I fell in love with food was just around the kitchen table at home. My mom is a really great cook. She will say, oh, I'm nothing special, but she's like a really great cook and just one of those people that has very strong intuition and can, without a recipe, whip up something delicious and just has great instincts in the kitchen. And I always just loved cooking alongside her. And her mom was an amazing baker and cook, but particularly an amazing baker. So I think just a lot of awesome women that showed me how fun and delicious cooking can be planted the seed for me to want to be a cook and just took every opportunity that I could get to cook alongside them. So lots of happy, fun food memories in my childhood for sure. I grew up in California, so I feel like we ate pretty healthy early to a lot of the trends that are now nationwide, but farm to table ate pretty light and balanced and in season with whatever produce was at its peak. And yeah, just never wanted to stop cooking ever since I was a kid.
I know there's something we share in our biographies, and I wanted to ask you about it. Why do you think it's so hard to be a vegetarian? I've gone through my spurts, as I know that you have also ventured into that world.
Yeah, I've been on and off with it. I am no longer a vegetarian now. I still do eat. I eat a lot of plant-rich stuff, I would say, but I'm definitely not dedicated to a vegetarian diet anymore. I think it's hard because it takes more prep, I think, ultimately, is what makes it difficult to stick with unless you really have a strong why behind why you want to do it. And it's gotten easier with more products that have entered the market and Heyday one of them. But with meat or fish, you can just go to the store and buy a piece of fish or a piece of meat and you cook that up and boom, delicious. You have a side. ready to go. Vegetarian mains, I think, just take more work typically, and there's more components and less. You can end up easily eating a lot of carbs and pasta and things that maybe just don't feel as satiating. And so I think it takes more work day in and day out to be completely vegetarian, to eat healthy and get a variety of different foods in your diet. I think for me at least, that was something that made it difficult to stick with over time.
Yeah, I ate a lot of potatoes, an embarrassing amount of potatoes.
Yeah, a lot of the white carbs for sure.
Yeah. What did you learn about branding working at Sweet Earth and Clif Bar? Are there any lessons that lasted with you beyond those two companies?
Yeah, gosh, so many. A little backstory on Sweet Earth. So Sweet Earth is it's around, but not so much anymore. But I'll go all the way back to the beginning. Was founded in the 70s as a California hippie brand that was sold locally around central coast of California, making all kinds of things. Seitan, which is a sort of like the wheat-based cousin to tofu. And veggie burgers and deli salads and prepared sandwiches and pies, like just anything vegetarian under the sun. And then that company went up for sale in maybe 2010, something like that, and was purchased by a husband and wife duo named Brian and Kelly Sweetie, who were veterans of the CPG world, the consumer packaged good world. They had been executives at PepsiCo and Jamba Juice and Burger King. So, like the big food side of things, they were really experts in that. And as they like to say, they wanted to repay their karmic debt after marketing soda and
I
chips
was wondering if there was a
so
penance
many
there.
years. Yeah, they had become really passionate about plant-based eating, primarily through the lens of sustainability. That was really the legacy that they wanted to leave. And so they purchased this company and kind of stripped it down to the studs and applied everything they knew about building world-class brands to this small little thing. And they grew it quite quickly and they ended up selling the company. And so, anyway, all of that to say, it was a really neat experience because it was a very small team and a small company that was growing really fast, but under the leadership of these incredibly seasoned people who are just like experts in all things marketing. Brian Sweetie was at PepsiCo in its heyday of advertising and did all of the Super Bowl ads with global superstars. And so he just had, and Kelly too, they were both of them really experts in their craft. So trying to think of some little soundbite nuggets of things that I learned from them, it's hard for me to think.
We'll come back to that. I maybe talk about Cliff for a second.
Yeah, and Cliff was really interesting too, because Sweet Earth was my first real exposure to the industry. I started working at Sweet Earth as an intern while I was still in undergrad and then worked for them full time straight out of college. And then I ended up going to Cliff Bar a little bit later. And so I went from this really small, scrappy startup team to a much more established brand that was the leader in its space. We operated like a big established company. And so it was really interesting to see the difference between moving really fast and acting on intuition, which we very much did at Sweet Earth. And then at Clif Bar, it was much more formalized and there was processes and consumer testing and things like that. So yeah, I mean, it gave me a really great view into how that world works at different scale. And I think there were a lot of learnings and lessons that I drew from both. And hopefully now at Heyday, we're taking those learnings and pulling the best threads out of both.
Perfect. We're going to come back to business here in a second, but I wanted to dig into beans because that's
Yeah.
really what I want to talk about. What's your favorite bean?
I think probably a chickpea.
Chickpea. It's a pretty versatile bean. You can do a lot with
It's
that.
a versatile bean. It's so creamy. And yeah, I think that's probably my favorite. We actually don't have one yet in our lineup, but I do love a butter bean or a gigante bean, like a really big, creamy bean is so delicious. We have a cannellini bean. We have the tomato alla vodka cannellini bean. That's a great one. But I love all beans. It's hard to pick, but probably chickpeas are at the top of my list.
Does that court, is there like a hierarchy in terms of nutritional value with beans? Is there like a bean that's the best bean?
Really, they're all pretty similar. Black beans are a pretty good powerhouse. I think black beans rank higher in iron than some other beans, but in terms of protein and fiber, they're all pretty similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. In preparation for this conversation, I went back and looked at some of those horrible food pyramids we were given as children in our cafeterias. And I, honestly, I looked through four of them and I couldn't find a bean. And on the fifth one, I found a bean, a small bean in the vegetable section.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder how people think about beans, like in their mind. I definitely don't think they think of them as a main, which
no.
But I often wonder if people regularly consider beans as a staple. I know in a lot of ethnic cuisine, it's a staple. But how do you think the average person thinks about the role of beans in their diet? What's your understanding of that?
I think at best they see beans as like a side dish. But I think you're right. In a lot of cuisines around the world, beans are a total staple that are consumed almost every day. But in, call it the standard American diet, the bean doesn't really have a traditional home. Maybe in parts of the South, black-eyed peas, and American cuisine is so nuanced and complicated. But generally speaking, I would say the average American is not in the habit of regularly eating beans. And yeah, I think at best, maybe they think of baked beans as kind of a summertime backyard traditional side dish. And I think a lot of Americans are like vaguely aware that beans are really good for you, but don't know what to do with them. We hear that a lot. I know I should be eating more beans, but I don't know what to do with them.
And I'm sure that's different with vegetarians and vegans. Beans are more central. What's your understanding of the difference there?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think if you're vegetarian or vegan, you're on the bean train, you're very well versed in using beans as a main, as one of your primary sources of protein. So for us, we definitely see not all of our consumers are vegan and vegetarian by a stretch, but a lot of them are, and they really understand that and are like, oh, this is totally something I would already make myself from scratch and now I can just buy it ready to go. But yeah, I think you're right. There's a pretty big difference in understanding and behavior between a vegan, vegetarian, and standard diet.
I'm one of those people that's a devotee, and I can never say his last name, Yotam, and his last name starts with an O. Do you know how to say his last name?
Odalingi.
Yeah. And I actually got the chance to go to one of his restaurants for the first time this year, and that was Oh my God. Yeah. It was in London, and it was in this very cute little neighborhood. And I was just sad that I didn't have a larger stomach mainly, but he really taught me how to make hummus. And one of the things that he talked about and actually later suggested it might not be as true as he initially thought was that dried beans are a better quality than canned beans. Is there any veracity to that from your experience or thinking about the dried bean versus the canned bean? What should we know in terms of the back end?
Canned beans start as dry beans. I guess I don't really understand what that even means. Like, I think probably what he's saying is that you will end up with a better quality bean if you cook it from scratch yourself.
It's just a hummus subject rather than a general statement.
Or maybe he means like even just cooking a pot of beans at home from scratch will be better than just opening up a can. And I don't know, we can break it down in a couple different ways. But at the most basic, I think a lot of people don't even know what canned beans really are. So I will explain.
Yeah, please.
Canned beans, the way that canning works, I think a lot of people don't know this. When you can food, you're actually cooking the food inside the can. I'll just walk you through exactly what happens. The cans come down the conveyor belt, dry beans go into the can, water goes into the can, maybe some salt. You know, I'm talking about just your generic plain can of beans. The lid goes on the can, and then the whole sealed can goes into the canning equipment and is cooked at 220 degrees under pressure, something like that, for maybe 20 minutes, give or take. And then boom, it comes out of the canner. It is shelf stable, canned for basically ever. And you open up that can and you have cooked beans. So all that you're doing when you're canning is just cooking at high heat, essentially.
Okay. So that's where aquafaba is, just the water plus the bean
starch. It's just starchy water. And it is really cool. I mean, with chickpeas, that aquafaba can like whip into a meringue substitute. It's really neat. I don't think that works. I should fact check this, but I think it's unique to chickpeas. And I don't know why. It must be the properties of that starch of that specific bean compared to the others. But yeah, it's just starchy water. There's nothing, that liquid that's left behind in a can of beans, that's all that is, starchy water.
So if you were taking a can of beans without sauce, you opened it up, would you drain out that liquid before you use the beans? Let's say with a black bean, for example.
Yeah, just depends how you're using it. I typically would, but it depends where those beans are going. If you're making a stew or a soup and you want to add some extra thickness and body to the stew, you could just dump the whole can in. There's nothing that needs to be rinsed off. I feel like people get the ick with canned beans of, oh, there's this like goopy liquid. And I get it. If you're making like a salad, yeah, you don't want starchy liquid in your salad. You want to drain and rinse. But if you're putting it into another liquid that you want to have some viscosity and body to it, there's nothing you need to rinse off of the bean.
Now, let's say I gave you a bag of dried beans and said, cook them. What would you do?
So if I was making them from scratch at home, and this is, I think, maybe what Ottolenghi was getting at, most canned beans that are just your plain canned beans, it's just beans and water. So it's bland, right? Like they're fine, but they're not particularly delicious by any means. So if I was making beans at home, I would start with a pot, a nice Dutch oven, some good olive oil, and probably chop an onion in half and face down the onion so that the skins are, or the cut side is getting nice and caramelized. Do the same with a lemon, a whole head of garlic, some aromatics that'll release that flavor. You get the caramelization that will give you that really good depth of flavor. Then you add the beans, then you add the water, a good amount of salt. You have a good amount of olive oil in there, and then you just let them cook and the beans will soak up all of that flavor as they cook. Okay. So that's what I would do. And that might have been what he's referring to, is that's going to definitely taste better than a plain can of beans, because the beans themselves will soak up so much more seasoning and more delicious than whatever you're going to get from a plain can.
What do you think about people who Instapot dried beans? Do you think they lose something? Because it cooks, it's a harsher cooking experience as opposed to a slower, gentle cooking experience.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a great time-saving hack. I don't know, from a flavor perspective. And that's like more similar to what the beans are going through when they're canned, is like higher heat under pressure. I mean, it is like similar. You're replicating that environment to a degree. And yeah, I think great. I don't know. You'd have to do a blind taste test, I guess, to see if you get markedly different results if you're cooking hotter and faster versus low and slow.
I see.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. I often think about beans like pasta, where there's like some people that will, they're a little more al dente than others. Yes. What's for you, if you bite into a bean, what's the texture you want to bite through? How toothsome do you want it to be?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think al dente is maybe like a little bit more undercooked than I would like, but we have to define al dente in this context. I don't want any crunch by any means. Like there should be no crunch.
But sometimes you cook them and then the skin falls off.
Yeah, I don't want that either. I don't want mush. I want toothsome is a good adjective. Like I want there to be a little bit of, what's the opposite of give? Like a little resistance, a little bit of, what are the words I'm looking for? Like, I want the shape to be retained, like a good firm texture while still being creamy on the inside and perfectly tender. So that's a sweet spot that you have to nail.
I understand why you were looking for a word. I'm sure this is a rare conversation that we're having
now. We're having this conversation for the first time ever.
So what for you is the most underrated bean? A bean that people rarely eat, but should be eating more. Maybe that's one that's included in your catalog of beans.
Yeah. So we have right now, we use chickpeas. We use black beans, we use navy beans, and we use cannellini beans. Of those four, and then we have our line of soups that use some different beans as well, but of those four, cannellinis are probably the least frequently used, and I think cannellinis are delicious. They're a white bean that's bigger than a navy bean, yay, large, and really creamy and delicious, and not the most rare thing ever. Probably lots of people have experienced the cannellini bean, but I think they're really delicious. A bean that we don't use that I would love to incorporate in a future product is the black-eyed pea. I think black-eyed peas are just so yummy and really have a unique nutty flavor. I can't think of another bean that is quite like that in terms of the flavor profile that you get. But I feel like those are, outside of the South, probably not consumed very heavily in the U.S.
We just talked a second ago about how beans are much more of a staple in many other cultures' diets. Which culture do you think has really done amazing things with beans, where you'd point to one. I would think about some Asian cultures. We'll talk about some fermented bean paste here in a second, but there's so much going on in other cultures with beans. Who would you point to?
Maybe just one of my personal favorites are Costa Rican rice and beans. Just so delicious and simple. And coriander is like a dominant spice in there. And they're just like fresh and tasty. And for me, that's just a personal favorite. But yeah, I mean, I need to do a trip around the world really educating myself on all of the ways that beans are consumed globally, because it is true. So many different parts of the world. And to your point, in Asia, desserts often feature beans, which is really
red bean soup is one of my favorite things. I had it at a wedding recently, and I sat there at the table while everyone was like off doing things like dancing or like socializing, just inhaling red bean soup. Love it so much.
Yeah, no, the sweet red bean, I love that too. And we've actually toyed around with the idea of, should we do a sweet red bean paste or something like that? Maybe just as like a limited time thing, but
sign me up.
So yeah, I'm down. It sounds delicious. I think beans and desserts, I'm all for that for sure.
How did you arrive at your kind of flavor combos? I think what makes your company so amazing is that the sauce is there, but it's not always obvious which bean should go with which sauce or which sauce to choose. So how did you arrive at those combos? Was it through a lot of testing and trials, or how did that process go?
Testing and trials and just like stuff we thought sounded good.
Okay, cool.
A very not technical answer. We really started, comes back to your earlier question about being vegetarian and what I said about there being a lot of prep work involved. I have been for long stretches vegetarian or pescatarian or some type of tarian. Legumes have been at the center of my diet for a long time. And often I would do things like, okay, I'm going to make tacos. I'm going to make some sort of chipotle-based sauce, and then I'll simmer the beans in it. And then that will become like the main protein taco filling, just as an example. And that kind of sparked an idea in my mind of, oh, why couldn't you just put that in a can? It's similar to baked beans in the sense that you have a legume and a sauce. Why not just come up with these combinations that could feature in a variety of different meals? So to answer your question more directly, we really started with thinking about, well, what are the types of meals that we keep on rotation in our house the most frequently? And how can we develop a line that fits into as many different types of meals as possible? So we think the first flavor that we really nailed down were the enchilada black beans. We're like, this is great. This is so versatile. You can think of 1,000 different things you can do with the enchilada black beans. And then the harissa lemon chickpeas were an early one too. And I just thought that sounded so yummy and could open up so many Mediterranean made type of recipes and bowls and things like that. Or could be the great base for simmering some chicken thighs if you wanted to bring other proteins into the mix. And so we tried to think about, what are the flavors that Americans are cooking with frequently in their home cooking, and how can we create products that are shortcuts to those types of meals? And then from the sauce, kind of started with the sauce first and then the bean second. Okay, what pairing seems to make the most sense based on what will go together and what kind of meal you'll be using this in?
Got it. I'll just share my own process. And Heyday is not a sponsor of this podcast, but I'm going to share what I do, which is I have a bean shelf at work in my work kitchen. And what I do is at the beginning of the week, I make a big batch of white rice. And then I open up whatever can I want that day. And then I'll put some like pickled vegetables and then heat up the beans and the rice. And maybe there's protein there if I had something left in the fridge.
Yeah.
But that's just my rotation meal. It's so easy too, because you have your sauce, your rice, your kind of pickled stuff for your gut, and it's perfect. It's a little easy lunch that I do regularly.
You don't need to make it any more complicated than that. It's really simple. And that's the goal, is that we're trying to give you all of that flavor that you need, that you don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting. Yeah, you make the rice, or maybe you grab a flatbread, or you put it over toast or noodles or whatever, but 80% of the work has already been done.
Okay. We're going to jump into my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. Tell me whether you think they're overrated or underrated and why.
Okay.
Feel free to pass on any of these. The first one, perfect bars.
Ooh, maybe underrated. I love perfect bars.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like the refrigerated protein bar is really in its moment right now. As someone that used to work at Clif, how do you think about them?
Love it. I think when I was at Clif, Perfect Bar was one of the only brands doing it, and it was still very much this emerging space that at some grocery stores you could find, at others you couldn't, and now it's still not 100% everywhere, but that refrigerated snack set has definitely become more established, and I love it. That's like my go-to if I'm at Whole Foods at 2:30 and I'm like, I just need a little something to get me through the rest of the day. I go there and I get a Perfect Bar, or I don't know if you've had Nelly's, those they're like healthy chocolate bars that are right next to the Perfect Bars. They are so good. They're really yummy. They have a peanut butter one, an almond butter one that are enrobed in chocolate. And I just think it's smart, and those products are tasty and healthy and feel so fresh.
Yeah, we've become a midday square slash Boo Bar family, and those are on the rotation.
Well, good. Yes.
It's like dessert, and you don't feel guilty, but then you
Exactly.
eat five of them, you're like, whoops, it's now really dessert.
Yeah, the midday square becomes a big midday rectangle at some point when you just keep adding
Exactly,
together.
exactly.
But
All right.
yeah, I agree.
Next one, and I mentioned before, fermented bean paste. You think that's over or underrated? Do more Americans, should they be using it?
Yeah, I think so. I think underrated.
Yeah. After that, me and Ed's pizza.
I've never had it.
What? Okay. How long have you been in Fresno now?
We've lived here for about a year and a half.
Okay. All right. That's my challenge to you. It
Yeah.
is the Fresno staple, and I ask everybody.
Yeah.
You're the first person that I've interviewed that hasn't had it. So
Yeah,
this is
I'm
a new
aware of
thing.
it for sure. I feel like it's very much like in the cultural ether, but I have not myself consumed it.
Okay. Next one, a cookbook, Cool Beans by Yo Joe Yonan.
I'm aware of it, but I should have read it. I should have had it. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I
We'll
guess it's rated
pass that one.
for. I
That's
don't
fine.
know, but I bet it's great. I'm aware of him and the cookbook, and it looks really awesome.
Okay, next one, the Freedom Trail in Boston.
Oh, yeah. Rated appropriately.
For outsiders, you're visiting Boston, do you go?
Yeah, and you should go. I think I did it once when I lived there, and it was cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Refried beans.
Honestly, underrated. Who doesn't love refried beans? Maybe that means they're overrated. I don't know. Rated appropriately, I could eat more refried beans. Everyone could eat more refried beans. They are so good. They're
Yeah.
so good. Recently, I've been on a little kick of just eating plain bean burritos like I'm a child, and they're so tasty. They're just so good. Like just straight tortilla and refried beans and nothing else. Perfect.
Okay, next one. Another Boston one. Lobster rolls.
Ooh, maybe overrated. We'll have
There
to
you
do
go. First overrated.
so
Perfect.
overrated. I like lobster rolls. I do. Don't get me wrong. And I get it, like a nice summer day with a lobster roll on the water. It's great, but I don't know. People go really crazy for lobster rolls, and I've had some that are like just fine.
What's your definition of a good one? What's a good one we're going to taste? Is the bread the most important part, or what you put on the lobster?
I don't know. I feel like I'm not enough of a lobster roll devotee to have a really strong take on this, but I do feel like the bread is very important. It's such a simple, as with any simple dish, every component needs to be like really spot on. The bread's got to be really good. The lobster has to be really fresh and tasty, and there's no room for error in a sandwich that simple. There's simply not.
What food do you miss from the Boston area that you can no longer have here? Is there anything that comes to mind, or something that they do really well that people sleep on? Pizza?
No, I don't know. I feel like Boston is an underwhelming food city.
Okay, so the city's overrated as a culinary destination.
The
Got
city is overrated
it.
as a culinary destination. No, I remember when I moved there for college, I grew up in California and was, I feel like 20, it was 2014 when, or no, 20, 2009, I guess, when I moved there. And it was very much the era of kale and green smoothies. And we were doing all that in California, and they were not doing all that in Boston. And I was like vegan when I showed up at college, and they're like, what's a vegan? And it was all like buffalo chicken and like bar food. And it didn't resonate with me. So I don't know. I'm sure the food scene is better than I'm giving it credit for in my like 18-year-old memory, but
Yeah. If you're a vegan in Boston, I'm sure that was a nightmare. Next one. And sometimes I'll pay a lot of money for these, and I'm curious your perspective. Heirloom beans.
oh.
Are they worth it? Is it the idea is that they're have a higher nutritional value? There's a bunch of like promises that come with heirloom beans. They're more, what's the word? I don't even know what I'm saying. Are they worth it, you think?
I don't know. I think, I don't know about from a nutrition perspective. I think Beans are such a nutrient-dense food, and I feel you can get really awesome nutrition from any old bean. You do not have to pay a lot of money for it. I think heirloom varieties are really, they're neat from a lot of perspectives that you can explore. Like, you can get into the bean culture and start to really appreciate the nuance and flavor between all of these varietals, and they're so beautiful and culturally important. And a lot of these small producers that are sourcing from these farms, they're really small farms, and I think it's a really neat thing. But in terms of beans are such an accessible thing that I don't think that you like have to only get the heirloom beans in order to experience all of the benefits of eating beans, if that makes sense. I don't know. I'll say appropriately rated
Okay.
for
Okay.
heirloom.
Fair
Yeah.
enough.
Yeah.
This is something I ate a lot of when I was a vegan. Black bean burgers, black bean patties. Do you think those are over or underrated in your mind?
Maybe overrated. There's a lot of bad veggie burgers out
Oh,
there.
why are they so bad? Why hasn't someone figured this out?
I don't know. They're often like just really bland, and you just feel sad. You get when you're like, I wanted a good burger, and this is just not it.
If you had the, let's say you're at a restaurant and you're in a vegetarian mode and your choice is like an Impossible Burger or a black bean burger, what are you going to choose?
It depends if the black bean burger is made in-house. If it's made in-house and they seem to be excited about it, then that I prefer, like the best version of that, I prefer over an Impossible or a meat alternative. I feel like the meat alternatives taste good in the moment, but then make me feel bad. Like, they just sit really heavy in my stomach. But if it's going to be like, oh, this is a frozen black bean burger patty that they just warmed up and put on a bun, then I'll take the Impossible Burger because it'll at least be a better eating experience.
Yeah, I agree with you. If it's done well and in-house, I lived in San Francisco during the time when Gracias Madre was at like its peak.
Yes, same
And
here. Yeah.
then the cashew cheeses that they
Yes.
developed, you wanted to eat everything that they
Oh my
were
God, I
doing in
love
that
that.
place. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
What did you like there?
Oh my God. I don't even remember the specifics, but I remember everything being so delicious. I remember they had some sort of potato dish that was really good. Yeah, I
Yeah.
remember the cashew cheese for sure. I don't know. It's been too long, but I remember that being like delicious in its prime for sure.
Okay, last one, the big one, hummus. Is hummus overrated in your mind or underrated? What do you think? There's tubs of it everywhere.
There's tubs of it everywhere. It seems like pretty highly rated, and I love hummus. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll give it an overrated. It's great, but it has proliferated so much that there's a lot of subpar hummus out there now, I think.
Yeah, there's some hummus that's like really bean paste in my mind, and I distinguish between those. Like bean paste has a thickness to it, like
Yeah.
that like good hummus should whip almost.
Yes, it should whip. It should have an airy quality. You want my favorite brand of hummus?
Yes.
Little Sesame. Have you had it?
I don't think so. I might need to recognize a label. Where do you get it?
You can get it at Whole Foods or Sprouts, probably just those two around town, but it's really good and like super creamy and light, and their flavors are really good. They have a preserved lemon hummus that is really yummy.
Oh, actually, there was one more in this section. And this one, I get high-end restaurants, fava beans. They're like, you get the fava bean spread with a little stripe through it. And oh,
Yeah.
yeah. That was over underrated as a bean person. What do you think?
Maybe overrated. I don't know if it's fine.
Yeah, I don't remember fava beans. I guess I'm supposed
Yeah.
to. I don't
Yeah.
have any memories of it.
Yeah. But you're right. That is like such a thing. Sometimes I feel like high-end restaurants like all just have one dish. It's like, why are you guys all doing this with the fava beans?
Yeah, maybe because they're green. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into a couple food business topics before we wrap up. What do you understand about your customers? What percentage of them do you think are plant-based? Do you have like a general kind of like vision of who your customers are?
Yes. How many of them are plant-based? I don't know. I would guess it's such a small percentage of Americans that are like fully plant-based. I would guess that a good chunk, like the majority probably of our consumers, are very comfortable eating plant-based from time to time. I bet it's a smaller percentage, like less than 10%, that are like dedicated vegans, just because there's not that many of the dedicated vegans out there. But our consumer for sure is someone who understands the benefits of eating plant-based and will do that one night and might eat chicken or fish the next. Certainly understand the value of keeping plants in the rotation. In broader strokes, our consumer is someone who really loves food, really loves to cook, but they are a busy professional that has a busy schedule filled with all kinds of things, and they don't always have some combination of time, energy, inspiration, or desire to cook fully from scratch for every single meal. I think you and I probably fall into this camp, like on a Wednesday night after work, sometimes you just want something that's quick and easy, but you still want to participate in the process of cooking. You still want to get something on the table that you made, but you don't want to have to do all of the heavy lifting. And so they look to us to fill in those gaps.
It's really good to just give your cooking, if you have a three-part dinner, if you could just export one component.
Yeah.
So you can focus on your smoked salmon or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That really allows you to, you know, because you have limited capacity, right? It allows you to really focus and do one thing well, and then you guys do something well for us in exchange.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because this is always the black box that I'm always curious how this world works. What does it look like to get on a grocery shelf?
Yeah, it's...
Someone described it recently to me that works in the industry as gladiatorial, like almost like a fight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It can be for us. I would say we have the benefit of existing in a space where there's just not a lot of competition. And the way that it works at a very high level for every grocery store, every aisle and section is managed by different folks. And so we have a buyer that manages all of the canned goods, and that buyer is seeing a lot less innovation come across their desk compared to the salty snack buyer or the ice cream buyer or these other.
The chip guy is sought after.
Very popular. And yes, yeah. Or if you're like trying to do a new sparkling water, yes, you will be like in the arena fighting to the death for that shelf space because it is so hard won. For canned goods, there's benefits to this and also a lot of challenges, but there's just not a lot happening over there. So we are able to get buyers' attention relatively more easily than in other categories. So for us, actually, that's been, relatively speaking, one of the easier parts of getting off the ground. We actually got into Whole Foods nationwide before we even launched. We had the prototype and they were like, we'll take it. And we're like, really? Okay. We better get to work. Yeah. The process at the most basic level is you submit your information. At the bigger retailers, they work off of what are called category reviews. And so they have a set published timeline and they say, we're going to review in February for something that will hit shelves in December, call it. So it can be a pretty long lead time. So you submit your information, you send in samples, you maybe get the opportunity to pitch them. And if they decide they want to move forward, you find out a couple months later and then boom, you get to retail many months after that.
Wow. Do you know when Whole Foods puts your products on sale?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We pay for that.
Okay.
So when products go on sale, the brand is the one that is funding all of that activity.
What is that choice about? Is it over inventory that you're trying to move through or?
No, it's about getting you. It's about putting something on sale so that someone tries it. That's the hope. They try it and then they come back at full price and you get them in. And, you know, for many retailers like a Whole Foods, they are what in the biz is called a high-low retailer where they have their everyday prices that are high and then they frequently run promotions. And so shoppers are trained to look for that, right? Like, you know that every so often your favorite products are going to go on sale. So it's part of the retailer's expectations when you get on shelf is that you will fund these promotions at a certain cadence. And from the brand perspective, it's a way to reach new eyeballs and grow the business.
What do you think is your most popular can you sell? And I'm curious, is it Harissa? Did I get it right?
It is a popular one. It's in the top three. The enchilada black beans tend to be the top seller, but the enchilada black beans, the coconut curry chickpeas, and the harissa lemon chickpeas are all like very close.
Okay. So is enchilada the gateway drug for people because it's recognizable in a sense?
No, I think it's the easiest for people to understand. I think they can imagine what that one's going to be. It feels familiar. So yeah, I don't have data to support my answer to that, but I think that it probably does function as a gateway drug.
Do you anticipate going into stores like Save Mart or places like that down the line? And what would that decision look like for you guys?
Yeah, so it's interesting. we want to be really cautious in going into retailers that are more conventional, more price sensitive, because oftentimes a retailer like that might express interest, and it's easy as a brand to be like, oh, wow, that's a really big chain, let's go do it. But if it's not the right shopper and the product doesn't move, they're going to discontinue the product. And sometimes that can happen within 6 months, and then you put in all this investment to making it happen and then it doesn't work. So it really depends. We evaluate on a case-by-case basis where it makes sense for the non-Whole Foods kind of retailers, where we're not sure we're going to find the audience that's going to really get it.
Okay. Let's imagine for a second that I made you the franchise owner of a local kind of health focused like grocer. It's like your local version of Sprouts. What would you think your strategy would be? How would you think about operating an establishment like that? And I'm asking this because I think Americans are used to cheap food products. It's one of our drugs and addictions. And I think higher end products tend to have higher nutritional value, better for you, all those kinds of things. But yeah, it's still a market that's slim compared to your Save Mart shopper or your Food for Less, Food Max, Costco, even though Costco has some things that are in that range. How would you think about like your strategy?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I feel like I would start with trying to really evaluate the landscape of what we have here in the specific market and really understanding the demographics in Fresno and really what they need that's not currently being met by what we have. We actually have a pretty good assortment here. We have Sprouts, we have Trader Joe's, we have Whole Foods, we have, and then, you know, all of the conventional grocers as well. I think honestly, an opportunity that exists is for a lot of grocery stores like Whole Foods, the grab and go is like a really big part of their business. And I don't know if you ever shopped at Erewhon in your LA days, but which is like a crazy insane store, but that is, it's 70% of their business or more, I think, are their prepared foods. They're like essentially a restaurant that happened to have other stuff.
Who shops there like regularly, you think?
I don't know. To actually do your grocery shopping there is insane. So I don't know. You must have to have too much money that you're like, I need to spend this somehow. I guess I'll buy my eggs at Erewhon.
In theory, like, because I know that the Big Little Farm or whatever that those folks, they sell their eggs there. And in theory, I would like to purchase all those things. Of course, $30 for eggs is tough or whatever. Yeah. And I look at it as the subsidized model where like a lot of the things that become mainstream, you can buy pasture raised eggs at not right now, but normally you could buy pasture raised eggs at Costco. Yeah. And that probably didn't happen without the small niche.
Totally. Yes. Blaze the trail. Yeah. But yeah, I think that, I don't know, my memory at least is that Whole Foods grab and go and prepare foods used to be a lot better than they are now. I don't know. I feel like maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was like really good. Like I remember when I was growing up, my mom would often get, if they were having like a dinner party, she would cater stuff from Whole Foods, and stuff is still fine, but it's a lot of the same exact foods that they've had in those cases for like many years. And the quality just doesn't feel that great. I don't know. It feels just fine. And I think that is a really big opportunity to have like really delicious, affordable, grab and go, healthy stuff that people can stop in for a quick lunch and make that piece of it. And then obviously having the right assortment of products around that and having a good mix of like your very affordable everyday staples and then the more like fun, unique finds that maybe you can't even find at a bigger store like a Sprouts or a Whole Foods would be nice to have, because we don't really have any more like specialized local grocery stores that I can think of, at least off the top of my head.
I know you're relatively new to Fresno, but I wanted to ask you your initial impressions of, and you can include grocery stores, restaurants, that the food world of Fresno. Do you have some initial kind of observations, having been here for a year and a half? Like how would you describe it? Like you're at a conference, people are like, what's the food world like at Fresno? What would you say?
Diverse. I think Fresno is a pretty diverse place and the food scene reflects that. You can access a lot of different cuisines. And I think overall the food scene is probably better than it gets credit for, because it's probably true of most things in Fresno.
It doesn't get a lot. Yes, it is.
And yeah, I mean, I think it's a relatively small city that has some really good restaurants. I think the thing that stands out to me the most is that the particularly slightly higher end restaurants that do exist, they're always busy. Like we often try to go to the Annex and you like can't get a table there ever. Like it is really hard to get in. So I do feel like the demand is outstripping the supply. And it seems, and this is also a theme for Fresno, there's a lot of opportunity. Like I think for people that are like our age that want to open a restaurant that are living in LA or San Francisco, to me, it totally would make sense to come here to do that. It's so much more affordable to get started. It's not as saturated and the demand is there. People like good food here and they're showing up for it and willing to pay for it. So I feel like there's a really great scene and I wouldn't be surprised if you continue to see that grow in the coming years because Fresno as a whole, I think, has been growing year over year.
Yeah, I was shocked that I got a table at Saison for Valentine's Day. I like felt like I hit a lottery. That was a lottery
yes,
ticket or
that
something.
That is. That's pretty.
Yeah, I got some serious points for that. Yeah. So we always close this podcast with book recommendations. What are a few books you'd like to recommend to listeners?
Oh my God, I don't think I've read a book in 5 years. So not the first person to ask. I'm like one of those people that's like, I need to be reading more. And it's just
what
not
about your favorite cookbook? Do you have a cookbook that comes to mind?
My favorite cookbook. I love all of the Barefoot Contessa. Classics,
yeah.
Tested, like they're always tried and true, delicious.
Maybe explain for people, and I was recently discussing this with somebody when I was describing having a lot of cookbooks and they're like, oh yeah, I just Google and find a blog that has a recipe. Like, why is that a bad, I know why that's a bad idea. How would you explain that?
There's just a couple things. One, recipes online vary in quality. Anyone can put up a recipe online and many of them are not tested well. And if a recipe is not tested well, like you just don't know what you're gonna get. So there's that element of it. And then there's like a romantic element of cooking from a cookbook, which I think is just a really lovely thing and a very different experience than like keeping your phone on you and unlocking it every 2 seconds and scrolling back through and hitting the jump to recipe button to get through the like paragraphs and all of the display. That whole
experience. Oh, the display ads are horrible.
I just can't do that. It drives me absolutely insane. So I wouldn't say I cook from my cookbooks every single night. I do rely pretty heavily on the New York Times cooking section.
Yep, their me too. I'm almost embarrassed to admit it these days because it's just, I love that what the newspaper has so many great things. I subscribe and I read articles periodically, but oftentimes yes. I'm playing Wordle and getting recipes.
Yes, exactly. We're just there for the gochujang pasta. But yeah, I think like relying on tested sources is a better move. And I for sure will Google things and cook off the internet, but cookbooks are just beautiful experience, the photography and the storytelling. And I don't know, I think if you like cooking, building up a cookbook collection, you can buy them used too, and they can be really cheap or get them from the library. It's just more fun.
Oh my gosh. And every year, that's one of my favorite things I look forward to the end of the year is the end of the year lists of books. And yeah. One of them that I really look forward to is like the cookbook list from the year, because I miss so many of them.
Yeah.
And it's like a niche publishing industry where like, you know, they're not, I just feel like they're not advertised very well, or like they have Instagram followings and then you find them there. But if you don't follow the person, then it's hard to find it. And
yeah.
So I love looking at those lists and trying to find cool ethnic cuisine that I haven't cooked well or I haven't tried.
Totally. Yeah, it's so fun. So fun. Yeah. I will say one novel that I have read in the last, I don't even know, this probably wasn't even in the last year, but Demon Copperhead, like everybody else. I closed that book and I was like, that's the best one. That's the best book.
That's so funny. I was literally talking about that book today and that conversation I was telling you about. And that book is interesting. Because I read a lot of Dickens in my day and that was such an interesting twist on it.
Yeah, it was just, I thought, so moving and beautifully written. And I was like lost in that story and was sad to leave it when I turned the last page. So that was one of those books that I was like, okay, this is why you read. This is just amazing. So yeah.
Get absorbed.
That's my contribution. I have read a book in the last 5 years.
Yes. If people want to learn more about Heyday or find your products online, and then in Fresno right now, are you also at Sprouts as well?
We were at Sprouts and they discontinued us. So
those
boycott Sprouts.
Boycott Sprouts. I'm on the team.
We are at Whole Foods and Modo carries us as well in their little bodega section. They have, I forget how many flavors, maybe four of the beans over at Modo near Fresno High.
Or you can come buy them at my house because I have a large supply in my pantry. So yeah. I'll open up a little mini store. Kat, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming to talk with Fresno's me.
Best. Oh my gosh, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.